Good afternoon. So I wonder how you're all doing. I had heard from about 8 people how they're doing, so that was good to have some sense of this, how this day is going. I think that one thing that is somewhat common is that many people are tired. Yes. So tiredness, you know, but which is not unusual for a first day of a retreat. For those of you who have been on retreat before, you know that that is quite normal, really. And as I said in the group, it's almost like when we come to a situation like this and there isn't very much to do, we go, oh, it's a good time to take a nap. It's a good time to sleep, you know, because there's not really anything else much to do. And it's almost like a message, like the we send a message to ourselves that this is a good time to rest. You know? But the rest, the resting is actually very good. You know, it's a very important part of the retreat experience is the rest, the resting. You know, and coming to a retreat, we can have very deep rest. And it's a rest that comes not only through the slowing down, just really slowing down, moving more slowly, also through the meditation, just sitting and activating the more subtle energies in the body. It's very, very good for the psyche, for the mind, the body. And also for the actual times where we lie down and sleep or take a rest. You know, it's very good after some days when we go back to our daily life, we can be quite recharged, right? Quite revitalized. So we don't want to reject that, you know, or make it wrong that we're feeling tired. It can sometimes be contrary to what we think should be happening. Like somehow we're not supposed to be tired, we're supposed to be awake and alive and meditating and focused and, you know, but it isn't usually like that. Oftentimes what happens, and the Buddha teaches this as well, is that we encounter what's called the 5 hindrances. You know, in the text, in the teachings, you know, 2,500 years ago, when the meditation instructions and the teachings were put down, that it's already part of the understanding that we are going to meet these hindrances. And in the Pali word, it's always good to, I've enjoyed knowing some of the Pali. The Pali is the language that these teachings were written down in, the Pali, 2,500 years ago. And the Pali word for this, the hindrances, is nivarana. And it means that the clarity of the mind gets covered over. It gets covered over with what's called difficult mind states. And the tiredness, or the sloth, called sloth and torpor in English, is slop and it's like what it sounds like, sloth and torpor. this is one of the hindrances, or another word for the hindrances is a difficult mind state. When the mind is colored, it's like colored, rather than the clear, bright awareness, the light of awareness, it's a kind of a coloration or covered over, like clouds in the sky that cover the sun. We know about that. I looked at the weather report and it says 100% cloud cover. not just for the last few days. 100%. I thought that was very interesting. But it doesn't mean that the sun is not shining, and we know that, or it would not be light, right? The sun is shining, and that is why it's light for almost 24 hours, because the sun is not going below the horizon. So we know the sun is shining, but we can't see it. Right? It's behind the clouds. And it is the same with the light or the sunlight of awareness. The awareness, or we might say the essence or the nature of our mind, the nature of our consciousness is like the sun. It's bright, it's light, illuminating. It's what illuminates the entire world. It's why we can know the world, why we can be in relationship with things, because everything's lit up. Consciousness lights it up, the sunlight of consciousness. So it's not like it's gone, right? It's not gone. It's just covered. So when we sit down and we meditate, even not, when we're not sitting down, when we're walking or lying down or in the standing, you know, the other postures, we might feel this covering, you know, like we don't feel very bright. We don't feel very light. We feel very dull. We might feel thick, very dense, very contracted. Mm. It's almost like that the quality of the light and the awareness is more like water, in that everything's flowing, everything's moving. Everything is kind of crystal clear in that light, in that watery light. But when the mind gets covered, there's almost like that water turns to ice. It just becomes thick and dense and hard and solid. Like we feel like an ice block sometimes. And there's not much movement, not much fluidity, not much flow. And we know the difference. We know the difference when the body, when the mind is light and easy and relaxed, and there's just a lot of movement, a lot of animation, the energy is very bright and flowing. Things are easy. And then other times it feels very thick, very dense, very tight, very contracted, not just in the body, but also in the mind, right? And then at those times, we can feel very solid and very separate, like I'm here and everything else is over there, and I'm isolated and separated, and I'm just this, I don't really know my nature of being connected to everything. That sense of what we call the interconnected nature, that sense of that I'm not separate from anything, but I know that I am one, I know that I am connected to everything. And when we feel this more open, kind of flowing, more fluid, more awake, where the energy is bright, the sunlight, it's like the sunlight is out, there's no sense, very little sense of separation. We feel like I'm one with the trees, with the birds, with the plants, the water. So this is like a real celebration of the way things really are. So I think it's a good, something that's been helpful for me to reflect on, that this quality of being, which is in its essence, is more fluid and flowing and open, not cut off from nature, from life. That's the essence, that's the nature of the way things really are, and I really am, my body, my mind. But yet there's some way that I can feel very solid and separated and not joined, not unified, not merged. So that in itself is something that is revealing to us that there is some way that we are being, some way that I am within myself that is somewhat cut off. Something's out of alignment, out of sync. Mm-hmm. Because that isn't the way things really are. We sometimes say there's some confusion. The mind is confused. When I think that I am separated from everything, solid. This is the ice block. When I feel more like the ice block, and yet we know that the ice can melt, and then it melts into its essence of water. No difference. Sometimes ice, sometimes flowing. But it's all of the same nature. It's all the same nature, not different, not separate. So when we come to retreat and when we come to our meditation, there is a possibility of sensing and feeling the flow. Just the flow. Just has a, you know, that we get up in the morning, we come and we meditate, we have our breakfast, we do our work, we come back, hear some teachings. There's a flow. Sometimes we're tired, sometimes we're more awake. You know, just the rhythm. Get into a rhythm. Sometimes it's more sunny, sometimes it's more cloudy. It's the weather, just weather. Internal weather, external weather. We have our own weather patterns of our own mind. Right? It's just these changing conditions, changing nature. But it's all this flow. Sometimes we call it the river of life or the stream of life. And we relax and we release and we let go into that river. We let go into the stream of life. It's also called the Dharma stream. The Dharma stream. Even they're used in the teachings, that metaphor is used for that moment of recognition of the way things are is called entering the stream in the Buddhist language. Entering the stream or stream entry. Because we enter into that flow, into the way things are. We're not stuck. So we want to understand these, what's called these hindrances or these difficult mind states, so we can recognize them, because they're part of the flow. They arise, particularly at the beginning of a retreat. This is what we find. And we want to know how to recognize them and also how to work with them when they come. So the first one is this mind state of wanting. It's also called greed or lust, you know, but simply wanting. You know, when the mind is wanting something other than what's here. Yeah, just the wanting mind. We see this wanting mind, and it's not so far away. We're often wanting something that isn't here. And depending how much we're wanting that, how much we're holding on to needing that or wanting that, we can feel the suffering or feel the pain of that wanting. So the wanting, there's a wonderful metaphor that, or maybe simile, that many of you have heard, which I like very much. It's the simile of the clear forest pool. And in a clear forest pool, or many of the pools that you have here, when they're clear, you can see down to the bottom. The bottom's very clear. The water's very clear. And when we can use that metaphor for the mind, for the clear mind, the open mind that's uncolored, it's undisturbed. You can see all the way down to the depth, to the bottom. But when there is wanting in the mind, it's like when you pour beautiful colored dyes into the water and you become entranced, you become fascinated with the colors and you don't see the depth anymore. It's like the pond loses its clarity and you can't see down to the bottom. You just love the colors. I love the colors, you know, the reds and the blues and the orange, and there's no more clear pond, right? So this is like the wanting mind. We become enchanted. We become seduced. We want something that we either imagine or something that is near, and we lose our center. We lose our balance. We lose the clarity. And we can no longer go to the depths of the clear pond. The second one is the aversive mind, or the not wanting. I don't want it. Don't want it. The pushing away, the mind that pushes away, that says, no, I don't like it, the angry or aggressive mind. One is, the first one pulls towards and the other one pushes away. We don't want it. It's also the resistance in the mind. Don't want it. And this one is the opposite, just the opposite of the wanting, wanting, not wanting. And the not wanting, the analogy is like, and this is all over Iceland. I also see it in New Zealand when I go to New Zealand. But it's the hot pools. When the hot pools are bubbling mud. You know, you just see it's so hot that they're just, the mud is just bubbling up. Mm-hmm. So you just see the, and so there's no clarity at all in the water. It's just hot, and the surface is just bubbling all this mud. And that's like the anger in the mind, or the mind that pushes things away. I don't want it, it's hot. It's hot, it's uncomfortable, it's a little bit, you know, just don't want to, it's not a good feeling. And so I really like that analogy a lot, because it is like that hot, bubbly kind of, you know, just very uncomfortable feeling. So that comes, so we see that too, the push, the wanting, and then the pushing. And then the third one is the tiredness, or the sleepiness, the sloth in the mind, right? Where we just keep drifting off or floating away. And again, there's very little clarity. There's not the capacity or the ability to actually see and to see things the way they are, because we're drifting away. And this tiredness is like if the pond was filled with algae or seaweed, right? The whole thing is just this seaweed, algae, and it's just thick, like the you can just imagine, like the mind, when the mind, that's how it seems, and the mind gets very thick and dark, kind of can't see anything, and you certainly can't see down to the depths of the mind, the depths of the pool. Mm-hmm. So we can see this, and today, you know, with all this tiredness, you know, you could just see there's no clarity. So you can't really investigate, you can't really be curious about things unless there's some awareness, enough awareness in the tiredness to be curious about the tiredness. You can actually investigate and be interested in the tiredness. You know, what's that like in the mind? What's that like in the body? Noticing if there's resistance or there's aversion towards it, if there's judgment, if there's expectation. That's all really good practice when we become very interested in the experience of tiredness as the object or the subject of our meditation. So it doesn't have to be a hindrance. It doesn't have to be something that obscures the awareness, there might be enough awareness in the tiredness to be able to start to understand that state itself. When I was, one time I was practicing in, a long time ago, I was practicing with one of the Sayadaws from Burma, Sayadaw Upandita. And this was a really tough retreat because he asked us to sleep only for 4 hours, you know, and practice 20 hours. You know, stay up, sit up, don't lie down for 20 hours. And so I wasn't used to sleeping for only 4 hours. I need to sleep a little bit more than that. So I was very tired, you know, very tired through the day. And it was a very, very good practice. It was for 10 days, only for 10 days, fortunately. I'm glad it wasn't for longer. I was staying in a room with two other women, and one woman would set her alarm seemed like, what time would it have been? It seemed like 2 o'clock in the morning. And then the other person was her friend, and I didn't know these two women, but her alarm would go off at 2 o'clock, and she would jump up and she'd go to her friend and shake her friend and get up. Time to get up. And it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. Wasn't time for me to get up yet. And they would, you know, be up and practicing. And so it was very, you know, it was Upandita would talk about practicing like your hair was on fire. Your hair is on fire, you know, so put the fire out. You know? So it was very vigorous, very vigorous in that way, but very tired. So I learned how to have a very good relationship with my tiredness, so that I wasn't expecting myself not to be tired. I was no longer resistant to the tiredness or upset with myself that I was tired or had expectations that I shouldn't be tired. Because of course I would be tired. So it was very good because I learned how to bring awareness, to bring my mindfulness to that state of mind. So I wasn't fighting it. I wasn't struggling with it anymore. And so now when there's tiredness that comes anytime in my day or my meditation, it's just, oh, now there's tiredness. Oh, now there's tiredness. It becomes like a friend, you know, meeting a friend. You know? And this is the way we can start to be with these mind states. So they're no longer really a problem. Even when we see the wanting in our minds, when we see the resistance or the aversion, the anger in our mind, we go, oh, there's the anger. Oh, there's the wanting. There's the tiredness. You know, because these things come. These conditions come. They arise. And sometimes we can't stop them. We can't change them from coming. And so we practice as much as we can with a quality of openness and kindness, a welcoming. But at the same time, we don't want to feed these mind states. We don't want to indulge in them. We don't want to add more that's going to make them stronger. So we want to bring as much awareness as we can to our mind states, whatever's happening, just to see if we can be aware. Because otherwise, if we're not aware, we could be caught up in the reaction, which is more resistance, which is more anger, more judgment, or more wanting. So we're just feeding the mind state rather than bringing more awareness and wisdom and love. So our job is to pay attention to these mind states when they arise and not to feed them. So if I'm feeling tired and I have some awareness, I want to see if I can work with the energy. So I breathe a little bit deeper, I sit up straighter, I maybe open my eyes, maybe stand up, maybe go for a faster walk, deeper breaths, get more fresh air. See if I can actually bring more energy to my system. Rather than just the first thing is just going to sleep. Maybe that's not the best thing right away. So I can see, can I work with the energy? Can I bring the energy up? If not, I keep trying and I keep trying and I just keep getting more and more tired and the tiredness is really difficult, then maybe I go to sleep, take a rest, go take a nap. But not maybe right away. I want to see if I can just work with it a little bit with awareness and with kindness and wisdom. And it's the same for all of these mind states, all of these difficult mind states. I want to see if I can change it. So I'm not just caught up. I'm not just in the reaction of the greed or the anger or the sleepiness. Can I bring some change, something that's different? Can I do something different? That's actually a good question to ask when these difficult mind states arise. Can I do something different? Is it possible? Sometimes it's not possible. But we want to see, is there any way that I might be able to approach this or interact with this in a different way? And this is the wisdom. So we bring some wisdom, we bring awareness, we bring kindness to our experience. The opposite of the sleepiness or the tiredness is the restlessness or a lot of energy. Right? The mind gets very active, the body gets very active. We're like this, you know, there's so much energy, we're running around. It's like the Buddha uses the analogy for restlessness and worry. The mind goes into worry, worrying about things of the future, like a fish that is on the shore, out of the water, flapping. Mm-hmm. Like a fish flapping on the shore. That's the restlessness, you know, and we can feel that energy, you know. So this is also a difficult mind state that blocks the clarity of the depth. And the analogy with the pond, the clear pond, is there's a clear pond and it's very windy. And so the surface of the pond is all rippled. So all you can see is the ripples. You can't see anything below. You can't see anything to the bottom of the pond. Mm-hmm. So that's like the restlessness in the mind. It's like the wind. The winds are blowing. We can feel that. And when there's restlessness, it's very helpful to see if we can be a little more quiet, still. Because the body will want to go all over and do things and move fast and think about things and all this. And so we see if we can bring some containment. Just contain. Helps with the breath, breathing a little bit, just sitting maybe more still, walking more slowly, being more quiet. This can help. But there'll be a lot of energy in that, but we're not feeding it by more activity. So it's also a good thing to work with the restlessness. And the last one is the doubt, the doubting mind. Does anybody have doubt sometimes about this practice or the teachings or about themselves? You question whether there's any value to this or is anything very good about this. Sometimes that doubt arises. And it can arise when you do longer retreat because you're just sitting and walking and sitting and walking and sitting and like doesn't seem like anything's happening. just going through the motions. It's like, isn't something supposed to be happening? You know, aren't I supposed to be having some insight or some kind of awakening or enlightenment? And so it can start to bring some doubt. Doubt about ourselves and doubt about the practice, doubt about the teachers, doubt about the teacher. Well, if I had a different teacher, maybe then something would happen. So we just start to doubt, this doubting mind. The Buddha says another difficult mind state, and he said the most difficult, this one, doubt. The most difficult because it could just stop the practice. Right? We just stop. It's no good. I can't do it. These aren't good teachings. I don't have a good teacher. And we stop. So it's very important to know this doubting mind, to recognize and say, oh, there's the doubting mind. There's the doubt. See if we can find it where we're questioning the value of our own ability and the teachings themselves. The doubt in the simile of the clear pond is like somebody took a big stick and just started stirring up the bottom of the mud. And the whole pond just becomes mud, just muddy. And this is like the mind. It's just this kind of mud, thick. Can't see anything but mud, dirt. This is like the doubt. It just blocks the clarity. It blocks the view. It becomes so real. It becomes so believable. And it's sometimes very hard to question the doubt or to doubt the doubt, right? To question the doubt. Is the doubt really telling me something that's true? So something has to happen where we question that doubt. Say, is this true? Is this true about my own ability, about the teachings, about the practice, about the teacher? Is it true? So we want to ask that question because sometimes maybe it is true. Maybe it is the wrong teacher, or maybe it is the wrong practice, or maybe it's the wrong time, or it's lots of it is timing. It's not always the right time for meditation. It's not always the right time for retreat. You know, sometimes there's conditions in our lives that need attention, need a different kind of attention. It's not the time to clear. It's not the time to open up in that way. We may need, like if there's, sometimes when there's a death, when somebody close to us dies, you know, unless the retreat can really hold the grief, the grieving and the sadness and all the emotions and the feelings, it's very, very important to allow those feelings of grief without thinking, oh no, I have to let it go. I have to clear that. That's not good. It's so important. It's natural. It's natural. It's genuine to feel deep, deep grief, deep sadness when somebody we love dies, or somebody that we love or close to us has a illness, a diagnosis, comes up with some kind of terminal diagnosis or something. This is really strong, sometimes a shock, sometimes it really impacts the heart, a lot of feelings, a lot of emotions. Sometimes it's not the best time. Certainly not to do a clearing practice. If we know how to be able to open to the fullness of the emotion, this is good. To really allow it to have enough to hold ourselves in the depth of that emotion. So sometimes it's not the right time. And I've had to counsel many people around this when they say, well, I can't meditate because my mind is filled with all these memories, with all this grief. So then it's not good time to meditate. You know, let it go. Just be with yourself in the way that you can. So we have to be sensitive. Sometimes it's the doubt, we call that great doubt, big doubt. It's like doubt we want to listen to. We question. I mean, in this practice, we want to question everything. Question everything. So we might say that in a way, then we doubt everything, but we want to say, is it true? Is it true? Let's find out. Rather than just accepting what the mind tells us, we really ask deeply. We want to, in this, for me, in this practice, I want to know what's true. I want this practice to guide me to the truth. Truth is another word for dharma. Dharma, truth, the way things are. So I want to know this truth. What is true? What is true? And I know that my mind, my ordinary mind, my habitual mind, the usual conventional mind is not necessarily telling me the truth. Has anybody noticed that? You noticed it? Sometimes the mind is not telling you the truth. It's leading you down another path that is not moving to the truth. Mm-hmm. So we want to recognize that. We want to be able to know our mind so well, to know what our mind is telling us, so that we can bring in what's called this discernment. We can discern, we can be able to see there's two things here. There's this going in that way, there's this going in that way. Which one is the one that I should follow? Which is the one that is most reliable, that is most truthful? This kind of wise discernment, to be able to tell the difference. So our awareness, our mindfulness allows us to be able to make these choices, to know which path to go down. Because we are continually offered many different possibilities, many different options. And particularly our minds come up with lots of ideas, they're telling us lots of different things. How do we know what to listen to? How do you know what to listen to? What can you trust? What is reliable? I think this practice of the awareness practice is so important in showing us what we can rely on and what we can't rely on. What is true and what isn't true? So it takes a great deal of discernment. So with these difficult mind states, we see that they come and they go. They come and they go. They're not here all the time. Sometimes they're here. Sometimes they're more covering over. Sometimes they're not. But when they come, we want to recognize them and see if we can bring some kind of wise response, as I was talking about with the tiredness, working with the energy, being kind, not adding more of the same, seeing if we can do something different, questioning, working with the energy. There's all kinds of ways to respond to these different mind states. But they're not solid. They're not solid. They come and they go. As all things are impermanent. All things are impermanent. And in some way, they're not even so personal. It's not like I invite these mind states. I don't invite the tired to say, okay, now I want to be tired. Or now I want to be restless. Now I want doubt. We don't invite them. They come by themselves. So when they arrive, how can I be with them? How can I respond to them? This is the wisdom, the awareness that we want to cultivate, we want to develop in our practice. Not take it so personally, right? You saw everything just comes and it goes. It's a great mystery, really, why things are the way they are. Why my mind is like this and your mind is like that. My body is like this, your body is like that. You know, we don't know the answers to all of that. It's a great mystery. So we want to see if we can be with these experiences in a kind and caring and wise way. Be with ourselves in that kind and caring and wise way. And as we do that, then it's more possible to be in the flow, and to be in the Dharma flow or in the stream, when we're not fighting and struggling and pushing and pulling and resisting and wanting. And we just see that all these things are coming and they go, they come and they go. And in this way, when we allow that, we jump in. It's like we jump into the water. We jump into the water of life. We jump into the river of life. And we fully immerse ourselves in that stream, in that river. And there's no resistance. There's no expectation. There's no holding on and trying to control. We're in that river or in the Dharma stream. There's a Zen story of the monkey and the river. It is said a great Zen teacher asked a disciple to sit by a stream until he heard all the water had to teach him. After days of bending his mind around the scene of the water, a small monkey happened to come by and in one seeming bound of joy splashed about in the stream. And then the disciple wept, the disciple cried, and he returned to his teacher who scolded him with love and he said, the monkey heard, you just listened. The monkey heard the teachings, you only listened. You understand that this is Zen, it's a Zen story, right? The monkey jumped in the water, splashed around, but the disciple just sat by the side, just listening, trying to listen to what the river had to teach him. But the monkey heard. The monkey heard. So it's a wonderful story in the sense that it's an invitation to us to jump in, right? Jump into the river of our life. And what would that really mean? What would that be like? What would that feel like if we really let ourselves get wet? Just get wet. You know, because otherwise we're just standing back, you know, just on the shore, just watching or listening, but we're not really in the experience. So what would that mean? What would it mean to jump in to our experience? So we could take anything, the breath, even to jump into the breath. So rather than watching the breath or expecting something from the breath, we're actually breathing. Breathing. You feel the body. The body's breathing. The muscles are being moved from the breath. The cells are being oxygenated. The oxygen is coming in from the breath. All the blood is being touched by the oxygen. It's like the whole body, this is what happens in yoga, I think, in the yoga breathing. You know, it's just like your whole body is nourished and replenished by the breath, by the air, by this movement, by this circle of oxygen and carbon dioxide. And we just feel this whole sense of nature, this nature of breathing. Not watching, not sitting by the side, not really just listening, but jumping in. And sometimes, you know, it takes a certain art. It's a skill. There's a skill because we don't want to just jump into everything. We need wisdom. We need understanding. We need to know what we're doing, right? You need to understand this jumping in before you just jump in, you know? So we're learning. There's a learning that's happening here. Sometimes maybe we have to first put a toe in. We just put our toe in, we feel the water. Oh, I don't know if I'm ready to jump in yet. But at least we have our toe in the water. And then maybe we go a little bit further. We kind of let the water come to the ankles. Oh, okay, I can go a little bit further. And then we go a little bit more, maybe to the knees. I still feel it's okay. And I'll go a little further, maybe to the hips. Okay, that's far enough today. Then I go back. There's the wisdom. There's wisdom there. But we're not just hanging back because we're out of habit. We're just starting to explore a little bit, starting to go in a little bit, start to understand some of these things, this nature of this mind, of this body, of the senses, of the nature. Just start to explore a little bit more. This is really what's possible for us in the meditation, right? So we're not sitting back. And this is a new way. It's really a new way of learning, a new way to gain knowledge and understanding, because it's direct, it's immediate. It's not just through the thinking mind. We're not just thinking about things and trying to figure things out and try to understand things and make sense out of things and just kind of, you know, thinking. This is really direct. Let's taste it, feel it, listen. What's the sound of the bird? I mean, we're really hearing the bird today, the birds today. It's really, really part of our meditation. You know, many people were commenting on the sounds of the birds. You know, they're so alive and immediate. We don't have to think about it. There's no thinking about it. It's just here. And then we learn about the sound. We learn about the birds, but we don't have to think about it. So we're not using our thinking mind in the same way, but it's more immediate, more direct, through the senses, through the eyes, and seeing, and hearing, and tasting, touching, feeling the body, the breath. Very immediate now. It's happening now. We're coming into the now, coming into the present moment now. We leave the mind, the thinking mind behind. This is really what we're working with. And when we begin with the first foundation of the body becomes that support for this present moment. Because we're in the body. It's not, we're not out of the body, we're in the body. And the senses are in the body, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the skin, it's all the body, right? And to allow the direct and immediate experience through the senses, we need to be in the body. We need to be in the body. Not just the mind. Not just in some kind of transcendent consciousness. In some kind of transcendent experience. It's this body. This body. This body, if you have the ability to see, your eyes are still good enough to see, if your ears are still good enough to hear, and your skin, you can feel, the different temperatures, the cold and the wet, the heat on the skin, and the feelings in the body. This aliveness, this immediacy. This is what we're trying to get a feeling for here. Because otherwise the mind keeps us in a small place. Just, it's only what it knows. It has a sense of its own knowledge. And it's very limited. But we want to move outside of that knowledge into something beyond what we already know. Move into that which we don't know. Right? Not just stay with what we know. There's so much more. And there's a wonderful story that points to this breaking out of this ordinary mind. Maybe some of you have heard this. It's about the an old frog and another frog, two frogs. It's from the Tibetan, Patril Rinpoche tells the story of an old frog who had lived all of his life in a dank well, in a dark well. And one day, a strange frog from the sea paid him a visit. And the old frog in the well said, "Where do you come from?" And the strange frog replied, "From the great ocean." And the old frog said, "Well, how big is your ocean?" And the strange frog said, "It's gigantic. It's huge." And he said, the old frog said, "You mean about a quarter of the size of my well here?" And the strange frog said, "Bigger." And the old frog said, "Bigger? You mean half as big?" "No, even bigger." Well, then the old frog said, "Well, is it as big as my well?" And the strange frog said, "No comparison." And the old frog said, "That's impossible. I have got to see this for myself." And they set off together. And when the old frog from the well saw the ocean, it was such a shock that his head exploded into many, many pieces. And I just love that, because that's what happens. Our head explodes. It's like we can't believe that it's true. We can't believe that this universe is so much bigger than we can even imagine. That there's so much more knowledge. There's so much more to know. There's so much more to understand. But we can't go through this mind. We can't go through this mind, because this mind is limited. It's small. We call it its bank, its data bank. It has a data bank. It has a limited set of knowledge that we've learned through our education and from our influences. But we think that that's it. And we go round and round and round with the same old knowledge again and again. And we think, and then we wonder why we're bored. It's so boring. So the meditation can help us get out of the cage, get out of the well, get out of the prison. Sometimes we talk about the prison of our own mind. Okay? So much more. So much more. And as we reflect on this, then we can develop some faith, develop some trust that perhaps if I do the practice and I walk this path, I engage in this teachings, maybe I will find out. Maybe I will come to the great ocean. And maybe my head will explode, which will be a good thing. So I'm going to end there with hopefully our heads exploding a little bit. Let's just sit for quietly for a minute or two, and then we can go for our dinner. Thank you for your kind attention. And it's just come to 5:30, half past five now. So Dora will be waiting for us with our wonderful food. And we have the opportunity to really taste it. Maybe to enjoy the food. This is really one of the pleasures of our day. Is the meals, the meal time. So to really be as present as we can, to be aware of all the wonderful tastes and smells and colors and that Dora puts a great deal of attention and energy into serving us wonderful food. So we pay her the great honor of being present to enjoy her food. So thank you, and we'll come back for a sitting at 6:45. Thank you.